Earlier, you're familiar that I says that this is not a lecture for swamis. This is a satsanga. A satsanga is a Sanskrit word for fellowship with truth. And in order to enter that communion, we calibrate our consciousness. So let us calibrate our consciousness. Thank you. I must apologize to those folks that who have gone over to Marshall's and I did not seem to appear there. I guess we got crossed up in our communications this afternoon. But to make it up, I'll give you a double portion of my time after the lecture tonight. The subject is religion, a science. The word religion comes from two Latin words, re and ligare. Is to go back, legere or legere, to bind. Is to bind back or go back, hook back up. Question number one. Who are we bound to? We are all bound to a creative intelligence. We can refer to it as God or cosmic consciousness. What binds us is the second question. Certain methods or techniques that have survived every attempt by man to destroy them. These techniques bind us back to the creative intelligence. No teacher of truth makes any religion. He fulfills the techniques that binds man back to God in his own life. But he must also vouch for the experience of what God can be to him or to all men. There must be a common experience at one point of the binding. Let's say for one moment, the common experience in God is suffering. Would any human being want it? I glorify in my suffering in my Creator. Imagine the prayers and poetry that we pour forth in the future if suffering is the ideal feeling showered upon man from his Creator. But such a feeling is alien to your nature. Such a feeling is not something anyone wants to crave. Then there must be a counter feeling, a feeling that everyone craves and don't seem to get enough and don't know where to get it from. That feeling is bliss. So God must be to the human being the highest feeling possible, the feeling of bliss, ecstasy. Jesus said, "My God is a God of joy," you know, or spirit, and must be worshipped in that same way, joy or spirit. Bliss is the feeling, not suffering. Now, methods that survive, that binds us back, are the only things that constitute the scientific aspect of religion. Method number one that binds us back is prayer. From the time man discovered suffering was not an ideal state, he mentally thought of some way to placate the unknown forces or the higher being with prayer, a mental form of communication. Imagine primitive men, lightning, thunder, cataclysms, volcanic eruptions, huddling in a cave. What would be the mental outpouring? They would want to send up prayer thoughts to stop it. To relieve them of the suffering, the fear, and the possible destruction, and restore the balance, peace, or joy in their environment, so they can continue the pursuit of happiness. Isn't that one of the lines in the constitution of our country? Pursue happiness, which is bliss. Prayer turns out to be two types. Ritual affirmation. Is that how you spell affirmation? Two M's or one M? Good. The ritual prayer is devised primarily to satisfy the senses and dramatize, to ease the pressure and the agony. So, that mere ritual action releases the agony and the pressure. I'm going to squeeze this lightning into the ground and get happy now. No more do I fear the flashes of lightning and the roar of thunder. So everyone joins in the ritual movement to bolster the morale. Eastern philosophy says the dance of joy is the greatest stimulant for raising your consciousness from a low depressive mood to a very high one. And we find now in the frontier country a constant dance, and you find in primitive tribes all over the world, in men too, in one society. The ritual, it's important, don't knock it. It plays an important part in our conscious makeup. But that ritual prayer can develop into a gimme gimme attitude. And we start to use it like a sort of a rabbit foot. Give me this, Lord. Give me this. Give me this. Give me this. And then a realized master may come among us and rebuke us and say, do not pray like the Gentiles. And here we are stymied with the statement, meaning don't go about overdoing the ritual involving with the gimme-gimme attitude, but get down to the real principle of communing with your higher self. Affirmation comes in now. Affirmation is a declaration. And when the Jews asked Jesus, after many months or years of his ministry, they said to him, teach us how to pray. As if to say, what have you been teaching us all this time? What is all your works? But he went on to teach them the fundamental techniques of communion in consciousness. When thou prayest, this is the technique, retreat into your innermost chamber or closet. As a boy, when I was studying to be a priest, I thought that meant to go in the bathroom. Innermost chamber. But innermost chamber happens to be the point between the eyebrows in a consciousness. And when you ask, this comes to be a very positive attitude now. Believe you are receiving now. That is to accept the fact it is coming into manifestation. This is difficult for one who has been exposed to all type of ritual activity to suddenly shift his consciousness and would try to bring about realization of his desires instantaneously. But having lived among so many different prayer groups, prayer activity with various people, and seen the technique applied over and over, we realize that instantaneous realization is possible. One of the failures in the affirmative prayer is the inability of the person to release the thought from his mind after he has asked. You keep repeating it mentally. To give you a little story, two monks were walking along the road. They came to a little brook, and there was a woman standing there. She couldn't cross over because she had on a long dress. One monk came up, picked her up, took her across the brook, put her down, kept on walking. The second monk looked at him and said, how could you, a monk who took the vow of all things to embrace a woman? And he kept on this harassment for a whole hour. The other monk turned to him and said, you know, brother, all I did was to lift the woman, take her across, but you seem to be carrying her. Yes. He is still carrying the woman in his mind. He hasn't let go. The other one has long performed the act and gone. Equally true, this is the problem in the affirmative prayer, one of the handicaps in releasing. Once you affirm, you must learn to let go. Now, we do the let going very naturally every day when you mail a letter. You think nothing of it. You write me a letter. If you don't mail it, I can't receive it. The day you mail it, you don't question if the U.S. Postal Authorities are going to deliver that letter to me. you take it and push it in the box and you get in the car, you go. Automatically out of your consciousness. Equally true, that same reflex action, that same mental attitude must be there in the prayer relationship. On the reservations where I've seen where they bring in a man sick or a woman sick or a child in the evening, and by the time dawn comes, the person is up and moving. Prayer has come into effectiveness because those who were involved are praying for the one result, but they have come to a point in the sessions where they are told now, let go of the prayer, forget it, you don't even know anybody's in this room. Every man has to learn now to clear his consciousness. This is quite a feat, but after they are capable of doing it, it comes as a manifestation. They learn to let go of the thought. So we see it is a definite method we have to understand. And that is one of the rules that binds us back. Master Jesus taught that rule because he had to apply it himself. But in prayer, ritual can lead us to boredom, fanatism, and eventually, when no results are forthcoming, even when we affirm and can't let go, we start the second chain or the second link in the chain that binds us to God, which is bliss. That second link that binds us back to God is the revolutionary nature which you call reasoning it out, analyzing it, reason and analysis and experimentation. You no longer use the ritual to fight the lightning or the thunder. The mind revolts because it has come to the point to change. It's going to reason the real cause of its existence. It's going to analyze it, and eventually it's going to simulate it or experiment to validate it. So now we don't have to fear lightning. We can now learn to recognize it and use it. This starts the consciousness evolving back to the source. So don't feel offended if I say that the scientist has laid the next link for man to return to his creator by setting up reason, analysis, experimentation. He has moved us one link closer to our goal. But even this second link can run into a dead end, because everything keeps going from the outside via the senses. We have to build larger telescopes, larger microscopes, and larger equipment to study what is here. Then comes on the scene another type of revolution, where people are fed up with over-experimenting, over-analyzing. They want to get down to the fact of being. We come to the next link that binds us back to God. It's called meditation. Now, in the first verse of of the book of Psalms. It says, blessed is the man who live according to the right law and meditate day and night. Will be very prosperous. Well, this is true if you read it. I don't want to go into all the words, but that's the gist of it. So the Maharishi and his meditation propaganda is not new. The early writings show in your scriptures that there are 23 to 24 times the word meditate or meditation is mentioned in it. See how the word is there and we don't even know it's there. Meditation is the third link, going back to that inner bliss. But this can be very tricky, meditation. Most of us know meditation as a means of withdrawal. We go to the Master Jesus and see if he taught meditation. What were his techniques? And we find that he did teach meditation by giving the very first technique involving meditation. When the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. This technique is not new. It's not Christian. It's not yoga. It's the essential principle of turning in the mental consciousness and the energy involved inside to recognize the light. In one of the Mongolian writings, this word was once an acronym, meditation. And an acronym is a combination of many words using the first letter. But it so turned out, and if you want to say by a stroke of luck, it came out perfectly in English to demonstrate the acronym. You know, Oriental people don't write this way. They always write this way, top to bottom. I don't think I could have planned it if I tried. M-E-D-I-T-A-T-I-O-N. M stands for mind, consciousness. One of the basic functions in creation. E stands for energy. That is why they say God is conscious spirit, energy, spinning all the time, force. Mind or cosmic consciousness moving all the time. But this conscious energy or mind energy or manas energy or manashakti, it's another way for it, is in a state of motion and is constantly distributed. So they say it goes through what is known as Siva or Shiva, constantly expressing itself in different rhythms. So mental energy or mind energy directs or distributes something. But you notice the next letter is I, and they always call that the ego's little self. This conscious energy that is constantly distributing seems to focus upon the little I, the little me, who is caught up in the whole world of the activity. So this I is individual. The mind energy directs individual. But what is important in an individual? The scriptures say, as a man think, that is what he is. So the only important thing in man is thinking. And thinking involves thoughts. The mind energy, the mana shakti, directs the individual thought. And we read and hear everyone say thought is a form of energy. Yes, it's a form of energy. Yogananda even went to give it an atomic name. He called it thoughtrons. We have lifetrons, which come from life, and thoughtrons, in which the thought patterns are set up. The Hindus and the Chinese have all identified it with a name, so it seems that it is an energy and it does something. But it's swirling, passing through our individual thought actions. The mind energy or mana shakti directs the individual thought actions. But in directing it, it must have a motive, a goal. Here we see this statement, there is a plan to this universe. Have you never read that statement or heard of it? There is no blind universe. There is always seem to be a plan, some distinct pattern. Even in the smallest snowflake, there is a geometrical plan. So there is a plan. And it's moving towards something. It's moving to its highest eye, the next eye, the great eye, or the real self. That real self, or Christ eye, is called intuitive self. The intuitive self knows directly, independently of the five senses, all the time. It does not need the five senses to make communication or work through. It's constantly in communion with the divine nature. So it is functioning independent of the five senses. That's why they say women with their intuition seem to know who is on the telephone before they pick it up when it rings. And you can use that same term, their extrasensory. But in meditation, we are referring to that higher self as the intuitive self. Now, in Eastern writings, we find the statement, there is meditation, two types. One type is called meditation with seed. And I think many people have read this. And meditation without seed. Well, a seed is an object. And no seed would be no object. The O in the word meditation could well fit into object being observation. You have to be observing something. Objects require observation. But it's twofold. Meditation is not a single purpose thing, it's a twofold purpose. It has a twofold action. And those who have read the autobiography of a yogi, it states, meditation will satisfy the twofold functions of your curiosity, of your nature. The twofold, that is the observative function and the oneness function. Now, observation is with seed, and oneness is without seed. You are bringing these two things into alignment inside of yourself. But what are you observing, and what are you becoming one with? The last letter is the reality, noumenon, not phenomenon. So, N-O-U-M-E-N-O-N, the noumenon, not the phenomenon, not the relative existence of our environment, but the actual inner reality that exists here. Meditation affords us now a way in which we can align our five senses and become intuitive, perceive objectively, and we identify with this reality here, God, light, the feeling being bliss. Once you perceive it, identify, you feel the bliss. But this is only the third link in binding oneself back to the creative intelligence. So we have three links so far: prayer, analysis, meditation. The fourth link that binds us back to the Creator, bliss, is called life control. Because when we do return back to the Creator, we must have the mastery of life control. All masters, saints, realized men have this understanding. They are in full control of the life principle in themselves. Now, we have instances of life control often mentioned in your scriptures and in every scripture of the world. No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down, pick it up. That's a complete declaration of a conscious control of the life power. I have come that you may have life more abundantly. That is a declaration of how to turn on the life force more into the mechanism. Life control is also known by another name. It's called regeneration. Conscious regeneration of the body. When this body has thrown off corruption and taken on non-corruption, that means when it's capable of recycling or regenerating itself, we have a body that does not break down. That again is life control. Jesus said to his disciple, Peter, you have been with me in the regenerative life and know me not. Indicating to Peter that he did not understand the principles of life control. If the master who has mastered the principle and return back to the creative intelligence does not have the life control, he cannot say to a man whose daughter is dead that she is asleep, as in the case of Jairus. This would be a tremendous injustice and not the type of game one plays with people's emotions. But he was in full command of life. Therefore, he said, she was asleep. The normal minds of people around, they say, this man's off beam, you know. She's dead. But Jairus has the faith and the conviction that he is a master in his consciousness. And the child is restored. The life force comes down. Now, life control is always the constant demonstration of more life over a lack of life. So in the dead child, where it's lifeless, there is a flow of life for the first time back into it. In the case of Lazarus now, that is again a demonstration of life control. He waits until the body is in the grave for 3 days, then decides to call it out from the grave, and even admonishes himself by saying, I did not have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around me. And he said, Lazarus, come forth. Then tells himself he does not have to do that. Indicating he has control of the life flow. Another way to tell his people and his students of his knowledge of life control, I will destroy the temple and build it back in 3 days. And you know, from the ritual mind of the individual, seeing the huge big cathedral there, or they can't see how this man is going to tear down mortar, stone, lumber, and put it back in 3 days when their ancestors took so long to put it together, let alone cut the pieces together. But a master is not talking of stone, mortar, and lumber. He's referring to the only temple that is genuine. This body temple, where life is inside, goes through the cycling of 3 days or 72 hours, and then pull it back up. So he does demonstrate that. See, he knew that he would have to face that particular confrontation. So one should not think his death on the cross is a horrible thing. Understanding what he's doing, what control he possesses, one begins to see the fantastic possibilities of man's future evolution. When you look at this mechanism and realize we haven't begun to scratch the tremendous potentials, and we're caught up in all types of behavioral attitudes that tend to tear it down. Yet he demonstrates that on the third day he rebuilds his body. Life control is not breath control. Big difference. Though breath is involved at some point, life control is synchronization between the breath and the vital energy flowing in the mechanism. It is this synchronization that Saul, who became Paul, was fully conscious of. And we went through our yogic disciplines this morning of showing how breath control is involved with life control. If we practice it, we can attain the control over the body. Saul said, or Paul said now, "I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. I know how to shut it down, turn it on, shut it down, turn it on, shut it down, anytime I want." For those who don't know, Gautama Buddha had only one technique. The one technique was that breath control, life control principle we spoke about this morning around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, concerning watching the breath and identifying with it. That was a technique he used. It's called the Buddha technique among Buddhistic writings. You'll find that same technique all through the Orient. That same technique you'll find in the writings of the Secret of the Golden Flower. Have anyone read the book? That is the identical technique you're encountering, creating the diamond body. Master Jesus, Elijah, Kabir, all these men knew the technique of life control. There are variations to it, but still involves moving the energy in the mechanism and locking the consciousness onto it by observation. That is the fourth link that binds us back to God. In the fourth link that binds us back to God, there are two wonderful results. One, the non-decaying, perfect body. Man ought to be perfect. Two, the freedom or ascension throughout the entire universe at will. Every master is here in this sphere of existence as well as in the next sphere or dimension. He's in the chemical sphere, he's in the electrical sphere, and he's in the ideational sphere all at the same time. There is no ring of impedance around him. He moves freely in and out all the time. This is what Master Jesus meant, free men all, lord of themselves. The rings pass not. That's a statement made in most metaphysical writings. The rings do not lock the liberated man. The liberated man is free from the three rings. The ring of the chemical environment, the ring of the electrical environment and the ring of the ideational environment. He alone passes in and out because he has complete life control. Because he has complete life control, he can now ascend into the heavens, the various heavens. Remember, Paul said he was in a certain heaven. Are you familiar with that statement? That you, when one day he was in the day of the Lord in a certain heaven, he perceived a certain experience. This is true. Those heavens are one. Matter acting on matter. Two. Energy acting on matter. Three. Consciousness acting on matter. Four. Energy acting on energy. Five. Consciousness acting on energy. Six. Consciousness acting on consciousness. There, at that heaven, time does not exist no more. At that level, that individual is God realized in the Christ state. He has full control of the Christ state, the intelligence that governs the vibratory creation. Now, he must go out. He must pass through that condition called cessation of physical form to demonstrate his mastery. He must enter the next condition, which we call resurrection leading to ascension. The next level is beingness, or the next heaven. Beingness acting on consciousness. Finally, ascending into the Father. Beingness acting on beingness. I am the first fruit of divine. Well, it is true, he is the first fruit of the vine in the Jewish genes. To demonstrate it openly among men. But not in all genes, because Christ realized men appeared in different genetic environment. We have them in India, the Dravidian genes. We have them in other genes. But he was the first to be in the Hebrew genes. He demonstrated beyond all doubt now full life control in that form. He came onto his own genetic forms. They could not accept it. But to those who would accept it, they might be Hebrew, Roman, Chinese, Dutch, English, wherever they would accept this life control, to them gave he the power to become sons of God. The individuals today coming forward with the understanding that life control brings the liberation. This is the life eternal that all men look for. The principle of life control, the transforming of the cellular structure. Anyone who has had any deep spiritual experience will realize that Master Jesus gave us confirmation in his own life of the four links in the chain must bind us back to God. From this we see that religion is definitely a science. Thank you.
I'm kind of interested. I understand Edgar Cayce said there's 10 senses. If you agree, could you suggest what the other five are?
The question is, Mr. Cayce states that there are 10 senses. I agree, there are 10 senses. Look at your body, and you will see 9 openings. And then there's a 10th opening to which you go to, right between your eyebrow. You call it the third eye. Now, count the 9 openings of your body. Pair of eyes, pair of ears, pair of nostrils, the mouth, the anus, and the frontal part of the sexual organs or genitals. These are 9, and the point between the eyebrow make the 10. I'm in agreement with Mr. Cayce. These are all openings or senses, and you have to use them. Therefore, in the East, we say the temple of God is a 10-gate temple. That's why they call it 10-gate temple, or 10 senses. Yes? No, the heavens do not correspond to the chakras. The chakras are the ganglia principles locked up in the endocrine system. Has nothing to do with the heavens. When you meditate and go in, you cross these levels. They are different levels of awarenesses where different beings exist who have traversed that inner consciousness. Now, until one reaches where consciousness is acting on consciousness, he is not Christ realized. Because in consciousness acting on consciousness, there is no time. Below that, where consciousness is acting on energy, there is time. All the way down to where matter is acting on matter, we have time. Now, time is the factor that holds us back from being God realized. Because God is timeless already. And if he be in his Son, which is the creative intelligence in creation, his Son cannot be in a time state. The Christ state would have to be a timeless state too. So it's the first expression of timelessness. Consciousness acting on energy. In Sanskrit, there are words, but it will not mean anything to you. You'd have to still have it in terms of English, because energy exists and consciousness exists, and one is superimposing its influence on the other. So when we use the term consciousness is acting on energy, you can direct your consciousness to this energy flow in that bulb and turn it off. Now, there was a young girl and her father on a train. The train does not stop at a certain point in India. The young girl said to her father, "I want to go and see the great teacher." That was her father's teacher. The father said, "We're not stopping there. So she decided she's going to concentrate on the teacher. This is consciousness acting on consciousness now. She wants the teacher to help her. The train is approaching the particular spot of the village where the teacher lives. And all of a sudden, just as it gets to a certain spot, the train stands still, the wheels are spinning, and the motors are out. The electrical power gone out. It doesn't move. So they had to wire ahead, and they would not get parts until a day or two. The girl was happy. Her dad was going to take her now to see the teacher. They walked to the village, it's about a mile or so. And when they arrived in the compound, the teacher was sitting down, meditating with his students. As soon as he opened his eyes, he said to her, "Why do you like to bother me? Stop trains. Could you wait till next time?" And that's a true story of consciousness acting on consciousness and consciousness acting on energy. Yes, they vary, but until you come to where consciousness is acting on the pure consciousness, that's Christ state. See, she tuned into his consciousness, to the master's consciousness, but she was not a master. Now, when the Christ consciousness in her would tune in on the Christ consciousness of the master, then that's a different experience altogether. She would have to go up into that state. Right. Now you know. She wouldn't have to get out of the train, or let alone go and bother the master. Yes? What would the minister be using in prayer, or what power is he contacting in healing?
In healing, or anyone who's sending healing power.
The only force that heals is life force. It can be stimulated by many methods. Therefore, we have the healing arts existing in our environment. The prayer consciousness of the minister is triggering the life force. Yes. Because the life force goes into effect and the healing occurs. Now, the doctor can give you a chemical that will trigger or stimulate that life force faster to perform healing. Because he's applying natural laws too to stimulate the life force. So we must understand what really heals. Life force heals, but life force can be stimulated by various methods. Now, some methods are not necessary. Other methods are necessary. So we have various schools of therapy. If you have a broken bone, you're not going to go to a dentist. You're going to see a bone specialist. And if you have a bad tooth, you're not going to run and look for a naturopath or a chiropractor. You go to a dentist. And if your muscles are aching you, you don't want drugs for that. You want massage or some other form of relaxation to take the tension out of it. So there are various forms of stimulating the vital energy. Now, if you don't believe in any of the forms and you think that prayer is essential. That also would stimulate the energy. You see, there must be an understanding of what does it and what will go about triggering it. Okay? Thank you.
Would you comment on the force of levitation? Have you ever read that in your studies?
The force of levitation. No. Every object in this universe, to some degree, manifests a condition called weight. But weight is not an actual thing that you can pick up and look at. It's a condition that exists by lines of force vibrating upon that object, depending on the position you are in the celestial movement of the cosmos. Therefore, if you weigh 180 pounds on the planet Earth, the lines of force would read on the measuring device, which is a scale, your so-called apparent weight. Change your position in the orbital movement and place you on the moon, you'll be very happy if you want to lose weight, because you'll weigh 1 foot, you see. All right. The sages have all realized the atomic physics. They know that they are light. As I said, masters don't involve themselves with psychic forces. They involve themselves with the actual principles of the atomic science. They understand this science thoroughly by looking into the light inside. They know how the lines of force work. And because they can direct the lines of force with their concentration or volition, they then bring the body to a point where it now becomes weightless by separating for a fraction the two lines of force that appear to be pushing and pulling on it. And they enter into a weightless state, which gives them now the sense of floating. Now, if you put a man in a weightless machine or environment, what would happen to his body? It'll float. Would you not say he's levitating? Because he's not displaying any actual contact with his surface environment. He's so many inches off or so many feet off the surface environment because there is no push or pull on his mechanism. Now, he is light to that extent and will therefore float away into that particular field. The realized man has just created, by his concentrative power and understanding, a field movement whereby he appears now to be in a weightless state. So the yogis know that when they use the term levitation, they are not calling on any extraordinary force. But those who are not aware of that think they are talking of some extraordinary force. And Swami Vivekananda was in this country. When they asked him, do yogis perform miracles? He said, life is a miracle. He says, all life is a miracle. They are using the knowledge of the laws of creation around them by understanding the principle of life and light. We have to look at these subjects differently now, not from the standpoint of something mystic, but in the view of objective knowledge. Just as much of an interesting condition like telepathy. Most people ask me, does telepathy exist? And when you tell them it don't, then they kind of worry. What am I trying to sell them? But to show them by the very structure of the physical laws around them that telepathy is a natural principle, they cannot grasp it. Telepathy means to communicate without any visible means, a thought, impression from one transmitter to another receiver in consciousness. Since thought is energy, as I showed in meditation, it's a form of energy that can be moved by consciousness. It's moving in the atmosphere, consciously or unconsciously. We live on the planet Earth. The diameter is a little over 8,000 miles. The velocity of energy is equal to light squared. That's 186,000 times 186,000 miles per second. It's preposterous to think, after realizing the fantastic knowledge involved, that telepathy is a psychic ability. Because each human brain in the pineal gland has certain crystals which they call brain sands, and these resonate or vibrate with a piezoelectric effect, just like the old-fashioned crystal radios. The waves pass through the brain and is transmitted or computed down into consciousness, and it comes through as a mental image or impression. So what does really exist? A lack of concentration or focusing between two individuals of a natural force that is passing through them all the time. That is the vital life power. So mental telepathy is no longer outside of the range of personal experience. It becomes a natural law now to work. And if you think, it is done. Prayer is a reality from that standpoint now, because you see your prayer thought coming into crystallization.
If you see it, it will crystallize. Huh?
Yes. Extend the consciousness more to understand the structure of the creation around you, then you will appreciate the vast divinity involved, and the devotion will grow. A reverence for life begins. You know Schweitzer, the reverence for life. He was more on the beam. Yes. Diets and fasting. Well, there are many diets existing, some to take off weight, some to put it on. And as far as fasting is concerned, all true religions in the world practice fasting. But in terms of the meditative science, we must come to a particular statement made by Jesus. Man does not live by bread alone. But before he said that, he said these three words: it is written that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Somewhere there is a systematic system of how to draw energy into the body minus the indirect methods of food. Now, diet would tend to indicate you're following some regimen to do one or two things, increase or decrease this body structure. fasting can do it. If you fast, you'll lose weight. But then if you don't understand the laws of fasting, I wouldn't recommend it. I used to fast, but I had to learn the laws, and I had to learn them the hard way too. Now, as far as diet, I've tried every known diet possible. And, you know, Orientals are very stubborn people. Even when they're dying and they know they're wrong, they don't want to admit. So I bit off more than I can chew. But I learned that the most practical diet is a diet that is natural to the individual in the environment he lives in. I follow a very simple diet. In the morning, I eat the type of food that grow high in the trees, that's fruit and nuts. In the middle of the day, I try to eat those that grow above the surface of the ground. I used to be a meat eater, so I had chicken and pho. And I had the beef and the cattle, you know, the pork and so forth. But I quit a long time. Then at evening time, I eat those that grow under the ground. Well, nature did not intend man to eat too much at night, you know. So my selection under the ground is very limited. She made me a big eater in the middle of the day because I have a larger variety, and a very small eater in the morning too. Not such a large selection. Following this natural, simple method, I found I kept my health better, and I can have that Ivy League body. Take off all the unnecessary weight. So don't get carried away with it. Live a natural, simple way.
Why would you not eat meat?
Well, when you're approaching the inner consciousness, you're going to be confronted with the electrical forms of the creatures that you have consumed, and they're going to want to know why you didn't stop eating them. But then your subconscious portion of your mechanism is going to tell you, these things aren't unclean. Go ahead, eat them. And therefore, you will stay in a level of development known as energy acting on energy. You never get past that level in your meditation. They are in the energy rhythms. Until you eliminate them gradually from the system and start ascending to other levels in consciousness, the field force does not restrict you no more. Your ability to ascend in these conscious levels depend upon the vibratory nature of your physical frame, how you treat it. Now, if it's dense, utilizing the forms that have dense vibratory nature, you're going to be held back and restricted. The more you're approaching living by divine law, which is man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeded out of the mouth of God, he's living strictly on solar nutrition now, or solar forces, he's got to eventually eliminate. On his way back to the source, his elimination begins with the four-legged creature, the two-legged one, the no-legged one, the origin, that is cell life. Then comes the fibrous shape, plant life. Then comes the liquid. Finally, he will demonstrate Einstein's law, man will draw into his mechanism light. So how is he going to go back? We have cases where mystics don't eat at all. But they didn't arrive there overnight either. It's a long series of dedicated service and awakening. So if I say I don't eat meat, it's because I have a program in which I'm working on.
Oh,
Well, the milk is not the flesh, it's the secretion from the creature. No, it's a secretion. It is not the actual tissue of the creature. The creature is not being cut up in any way and deprived of his life existence. He secretes this.
That would be liquid.
That's a liquid. Well, I met Brother Thomas in Monk's Corner. And someone asked the same question, why do we eat meat and why we should not eat meat? And the Bible says so many different things about it. And Brother Thomas was in the monastery there in South Carolina. And he says, you know, I don't like to get into the technicalities of the whys and the wherefores and the do-nots. It's simply that it's cheaper to live that way. I used to. I don't anymore. Protein is in many forms, and nature has them in three parts of the day for you. But don't jump to my level and do it. You have to go gradually till your body makes the adjustment.
Are eggs somewhere on the level of meat?
Well, the egg is in the body of the fowl, and it's formed in there. So, if you have to eat the egg, eat it at night. And if you have to eat meat at night, eat the fish. They live in darkness. And if you have to eat the four-legged creatures and the two-legged ones, eat them in the middle of the day. You're eating them in their time sequence and in their own natural movement.
But if you were eliminating, you eliminate meat and then egg?
Well, you'll have to eliminate in the same sequence. You don't become addicted to an object or substance unless it's a repetitive action. And you can't quit right away, you have to withdraw slowly. So equally true, this is a long series. If you are 25 years of age, look how long you've been eating this substance. You just up and dump it. That's incorrect, that's unbalanced. That is not realization. Realization is a gradual elimination, replacing it with its proper laws, balance.
Have you clarified something you said this afternoon about Christ and his resurrected body when he returned to his disciples? He partook of food.
Mm-hmm.
And you said the master could touch the food and draw the substance, the nourishment out of their body. Yeah. And yet in the Bible, and I think in the KC readings, it said that Christ masticated this food and digested it. The Bible says he ate, and I think the readings indicate that in his resurrected, his perfected body, he could eat food and do all the things.
He could. That's not he could not. I'm just saying that this is one of the ways they usually do, that they will take it in through the finger. Now, if he ate it to show them, and you know, I've read many Bibles, and several Bibles don't even claim he ate the fish. They just said he prepared it for them, and they did eat. But it doesn't say what he ate. And I've seen this in various writings or in various religious books. Now, from my own personal experience, from the laws that they involve themselves with, they have the ability to absorb osmosically to give you the indication. If they put it in their mouth, they can do it too. But what is more outstanding is that the fact that energy goes directly through their system, and we are familiar with intravenous methods. This would be the emphasis on your consciousness to show you that they don't need to use this. They can just look at it and draw it in. This would be only a roundabout way to convince you that they are like you. It's not necessary when they're in that state. In fact, they can breed it. What difference? But doing it with a finger as an indication of respect or holding it, this is absorption. The whole thing is absorption.
In other words, he ate it because his disciples were...
Would feel more at home with the fact that the eating it is a natural way. We live in an environment where we see intravenous methods are being used. I would be more inclined to want to see it that way. Because seeing it by this way would not satisfy the consciousness, but seeing it drawn into the system and to seeing it cycled out of the system at the same time. You know, it takes so many X hours for food to digest and pass out as residue. Now, if you can see this process speeded up and passed out of the system, you realize that this is a fantastic mechanism. Not his. Yours that don't even come to that level. Look what you got to work for and what more to strive for. You appreciate your own. You don't want to leave this realm too quick. You want to make it. I think we've called it now.